Welcome to Stormy Weather. This is Aeolus Kephas bringing you news from the front line in the end times. This is the second part of my chat with Jake Kotze. So this is pretty well leading into the next question. We've touched on it already. Is madness a necessary and inevitable phase or side effect of gnosis? Have you experienced this, and if so, would you recommend it? Well, you've actually covered this, haven't you, really?
But let's just briefly say that, you know, it depends on what there's the mind, right? And the mind-made self, and going out of that mind-made self does seem like madness to a big part of the population, because they don't understand how you can live without mind, or how the context of reality can be so mercurial, you know, or can be, is not that, you know, we make up consensus reality as we go along, you know. To a lot of people, these ideas are connected to their identity, right, as we've said, and when you are threatening this, the shape of their reality, the shape of consensus reality, the shape of their identity, then which is made by the mind, obviously, you know. Mm-hmm. All these things come from mind. So then it's like madness, you know. Literally, I mean, the conversation we are having by a vast percentage of the population could even be considered mad already.
Right.
But we understand each other. The things have increasingly become compartmentalized, where like groups of consciousness can come together and have a very, but it's subtle. Like, there are people who can have a conversation about games like Dungeons and Dragons or Star Trek, and that would seem like madness to a lot of people, right? So it's not just, you know, that we're clinically insane. It's that this is a natural process of, you know, the more interconnected we're getting, we're building all these little worlds that it's just to integrate, having, you know, be able to live as one body collectively on the planet, and then at the same time live in your individual group, and having those work harmoniously together without the contradictions having to rip the architecture apart or being so threatening to the collective that they have to exterminate you, you know, because of their fear reaction to how far away your reality tunnel is from the consensus reality tunnel.
Right.
So I think, you know, the way we're approaching this, because we can talk sensibly to the individuals who comprise the majority of the culture, we have in a way created a safe space, because we're not antagonistic, and we're not so distant that we, you know, appear like lunatics, and we're not hateful, we're not angry, we're just very, you know, different but it's almost like naturally people don't even really care, because they don't want to really be involved in what we're talking about right now.
Mm-hmm.
In the masses, they've self-selected to be involved in you know, in pop culture or in mainstream media, or to be listening to our show. So you are exactly where you want to be. So it's not a big problem. I think it can actually magically work in a way that we can all have our, you know, extremely different realities, and yet still they all work together. And I think things like the internet is facilitating that type of new consciousness arising, where, you know, it's natural. It won't be like threatening or like, you know, snobbish, like we have our own world, or, you know, if it wants to be, then it is. But it's like, it just harmoniously works together, and it's new dimensions, you know. Am I making sense?
Yeah. It sounds like you're talking about creating little mini consensuses within the greater consensus. That's
yeah, and it's already happened, right? It's already happened.
To some extent,
it's literally happening. Yeah.
I mean, I'm certainly working 24/7 to imagine not a better world, but a different world, a different frame of reference, a different context within which I can live and connect to those that I want to connect to. And form. It's like a crucible. I see it as like a space in which we can be transformed in a way that is, well, I think it's always going to be difficult. It's always going to be painful. The truth always is, but not non-traumatic, which is smooth, which is organic. And so that's really my intent, and to the more people I can bring into that crucible or that alchemical space, that the happier I'm going to be, just for personal reasons, because I like company, you know. So, but at the same time, within that consensus that we're creating here through the internet, through this technology, primarily, I don't know about you, but well, you're in Winnipeg, so you've got more opportunity perhaps, but I don't have too many actually flesh and blood connections right now. It's mostly in the internet. And so that's, there's a sort of, it seems precarious to me in more ways than one, because as I say, we're creating this consensus within the greater consensus, and our consensus is very different. It's not anti pathetic, it's not antagonistic towards necessarily towards the consensus reality, but it is antithetical to it, I think.
Yeah, and it affects consensus reality, and that's the point. A great point of what we're doing is to, through trickle down, affect consensus reality, because it does,
Like a
it does. I
virus.
mean, maybe not like a virus. I mean, we want it to be more flexible and open to, amazing ideas and interesting concepts. And that's why we, part of, I think, a subtle reason of why we're involved in what we're doing is because it affects consciousness and kind of stretches the boundaries of what is acceptable in the normal world, which, you can increasingly see happening with greater and greater speed. Maybe, that's interpretation, but my interpretation is that, when you see media and attitudes in mainstream pop culture, the subjects that people are interested in become, faster and faster, things that would have been considered fringe just a short while ago. So there is a transition happening, So we'll see. See, because I mean, a lot of that depends on how you interpret the data.
Well, do you feel yourself as the work that you're doing, the life that you're living in this sort of mini consensus that you're helping to create, do you feel that there are that it's a dangerous game, and that there are areas that it's like a razor's edge? This is how I experience it anyway, so I don't necessarily want to lead you into my own perception, but I'm curious if you have a similar experience. There are certain areas that it's not safe to go, I won't be specific, but the things that we really can't afford to talk about because our position is too precarious. And if we do become too threatening to the consensus, and also what if what we're talking about here is that the imaginal realms are sort of, it's like the waters are rising and the cracks are appearing, and so these imaginal realities are starting to creep or seep into the consensus, and people are going to be threatened by that, as you've said, that their reality and their identity is, if it becomes under threat, they will experience it as madness and as terror. And so if they feel that pressure, then they're going to react. And it seems to me that it is possible that those of us who are actually on the front line of this movement could become demonized or scapegoated very, very easily. Do you ever feel that sense of precariousness?
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Like in the beginning when I started blogging, I was more into conspiracy theory and sort of nuts and bolts realities of 9/11 and government related stuff. I thought that maybe what you're doing could seem threatening to people, but now I feel like if people even have an inkling of what I'm talking about, they already would be beyond the point of wanting to commit any sort of crime against me, because I feel like it's so fringe, it's so peculiar that it would look to the observer coming from consensus at this point like complete gibberish noise. Like Robin Tunney is opening the Stargate because of what? It's just, I think it's so outlandish from the consensus viewpoint that the moment you even get it, you're already in trouble as far as your consensus reality tunnel is, because you would have had to surrender it already. So I feel like it's self selected itself as being invisible to the forces that would see it as a threat. And I think the universe is, because I feel like it's not me, it's like it's coming, like you're just a door, a bridge for creativity. And synchromysticism is something that, yeah, it's a bit of a virus. You could see it that way, but it's just one metaphor. But it's a way of changing consciousness, a potent way of changing consciousness. But I think it would I think it's invisible to those who think, but just by its very nature, it's invisible to the forces that would wish to destroy it. They wouldn't even know what it is until it's too late, you know. I feel like
I do
I don't know, I feel like it's being protected by from above, really.
well, I think you're right. In fact, I know you are, because this is a movement that's beyond any human agency, and it's going to happen, whatever we do or don't do, isn't it? It just is. It's not even happening because it's always been. But that's if one's able to drop into the impersonal and be in that archetypal realm where one's simply witnessing. We're just witnessing. That's then there's absolutely nothing to fear, because there's nothing to protect and there's nothing to lose. And but that's then we could end up in some concentration camp, being having our brains fried, and that would be okay too, wouldn't it? So that's quite a it's a very you know what I'm saying? I mean, as long as one's still in a personal place of just wanting to be comfortable and have a good life, there's still something to protect, I think. And I mean, what you and I do is quite different. And I still do work in the conspiracy realms, and I do like to stir things up and provoke and to challenge. And it's a personal thing. I freely admit that this is part of my own neurotic blueprint that I'm working out, and so I like to live on the edge. But I also think that beyond that, I think there's an energetic thing that's happening, which is that we really do have to be more and more aware of what we're doing, and more impeccable in that, because one misstep is going to be catastrophic for us personally. Because I do think there's a resistance to the, whatever you want to call it, the emergence of the imaginal, of the other, the shamanic, the shamans in our culture. There's a resistance to us, and that is actually what's going to ensure that we prevail, not as individuals, but as a movement, because resistance makes it stronger. But I think as individuals, I think we are targeted. I do. I don't think that that's paranoia. I think that that's just common sense. Is that, in a sense, I don't say we in a personal sense, as in Jake and Aeolus, but those of us who are able to tune into this frequency and carry this virus without being deranged by it, are a threat to consensus reality just by our existence. And consensus reality is going to put up a fight, which, as I say, is, it wouldn't have it any other way. It's the way it's got to be. But it's, I
Well,
personally.
part of aligning is moving beyond fear, you know. So
Sure.
I feel like following your bliss and the truth, your personal truth, part of that is surrendering your fear. And it's funny, I feel like the less fear you have and the more you actually focus on your personal truth, the less threat it is. Like it's sort of like, because consciousness itself is the animating force and is what we are trying to realize, or at least, you know, I feel like my interpretation of synchromysticism is that it's the exact goal of Zen or enlightenment or whatever it is. It's just a new word for that, or it's become a new word for that. Because the enlightenment animates all. It's like you're invincible, because the very force that is wanting to be, growing in the species is animating it, and will organize, self-organize every facet of the rest of the universe to allow it to happen, regardless of the odds or the threat, because the threat itself is coming from it as well. So, I don't think there's anything to fear because it's only facets of ourself. And I mean, if it on a game level it requires, spooky things to happen, then so be it, but as we've said, the individual, is only a perception, and the mind-made self is only a perception, and the eternal observer, the consciousness that is everything that is rising now in humanity, it's the new state of evolution, is the force that is animating this very conversation, is the force that is animating the conspiracy elements, if you even want to call them that, and is animating every. So it really, there, it's a win-win situation. I think it's just so peculiar to really integrate that into your belief system that people are resistant to it because it basically says that there's nothing to fear and everything is perfect and all that kind of thing. And I think earlier we touched upon the idea that, it's one of the things that we are the most afraid of is that there's nothing to fear or that everything is perfect or that everything is exactly the way we want it to be. So I think it, these are what you say, they're things that they exist in consciousness, the fear and the concern about the future. But I feel like those are facets of the personal self that needs to be, when aligned, melt away. And then you are like, the warrior who is completely impervious.
To harm, sure. Well, that's a, the samurai, the ninja who moves between the raindrops, and but that's a very high state.
Silently, yeah.
It's a very high state of impeccability, isn't it? I don't know about you, Jake, but I'm the rain still lands on me, and I think, I mean, to have a vision is what it's all about, isn't it? And to hold that vision in one's consciousness at all times, and so not to let the dangers, the realities distract us from our path, so our eyes are always on that star, that guiding light, and we're going home one way or
Yeah.
another, no matter what the obstacles are, we're going
Right.
home. But what I'm talking about isn't fear, you see, because awareness of danger isn't the same as fearing that danger. But this is an assumption that I'm always encountering, is that if I speak about the things that people fear, then people think I'm talking about the fear, whereas I'm actually just talking about the things that we've created through our fear. And to get clear of that fear, I think we need to first of all address, recognize, and own, reclaim, and integrate those sort of coagulated pockets of fear that we've created by disowning
Yeah.
our own darkness.
Well, I think you should go for them then. You shouldn't I mean shy away, like where the light of consciousness wants to go where there's resistance. And fear to me is a bit of a resistance. So I think that's where you should put the most of your attention then, is the facets that make you fear. Because I
Sure.
feel like when they're correctly understood, they would dissolve as fears,
Well, I guess that's what I'm saying, that fear allows us to focus on what we need to focus on, but we don't focus on the fear, we focus on what's causing the fear and see that there's nothing to be afraid of.
Right, yeah. That sounds reasonable. Yeah.
It's a
But
part
let's
of
do
it.
it because let's do it because, one doesn't want fears and tensions in you, and one needs to get rid of that stuff. And I don't believe this is another tricky aspect. Not, it's exactly not tricky. See, my language gets in the way of my in the way of the message. It's very funny when that happens. I feel it's actually easier to walk the path of the warrior and to be in alignment than the opposite. Like, I think there's a misunderstanding that people think to be joyous, to be without fear, and to be spiritually, guided and all these things, or to be enlightened is easy. Like, I mean, it literally is easy. It's simple. It's the path of least resistance. There's a belief, there's a fear that it's too easy, and that is the big thing that keeps one from actually experiencing it or from walking that particular path, is because it's so easy. Like, it's pain and it's ignorance and it's debilitating to not be enlightened, or to it's actually the natural state of humanity is being enlightened. It's the healthy body, healthy mind state is easy. I mean, we've just been trained as a culture and as a species, and this is why it's so weirdly neurotic and strange madness we're all living under, is that being enlightened is difficult or is a challenge or is, you know, it's no, it's not. That's the easy thing, you know. That's where there's no resistance to what you're doing and everything's flowing. It's joyous and you know, it's just like the environment and the organism seems to live in this harmonious space where, you know, everything that happens to you just seems connected to synchronicity and to, you know, higher insights. And if it's simple, like drinking the coffee at the coffee shop, it has this amazing depth to it and you feel at peace there. Or if it's, you know, the more you know, externally like exciting phases of your life, like some sort of sexual encounter or some sort of wonderful, mind-blowing piece of art you're interacting with, then that has amazing depth to it. You know, it doesn't matter. Everything is simple and easy and flows. That is easy. That is wonderful. And that is what I'm trying to help people achieve with synchronicity and synchromysticism is, and it's easy. It's not difficult. It's the other thing. It's living in fear. It's living in resistance. It's fighting you know, the higher self, the unaligned facets. That is difficult. That is challenging. And it's a trick because people, if they knew it was easy, and it's, you know, it doesn't take like years of dedicated meditation or deep spiritual insights actually to realize this state, you know. It really just takes you believing that it's that simple.
Yeah, but it's what's
Then you can
that's the
have it.
hard
It's
part, isn't
yours.
it?
It's
It's the hard
it
part is
is it
convincing ourselves how easy it
is.
is.
Exactly. But so it's but again, there it's it sounds like a when if we say it in language, it sounds like a contradiction, but I think you intuitively know what I mean,
No,
which is why you
you said
agree.
it very well. It's our natural state. We have to work very, very hard to be out of our natural state and to be as miserable as we are. And then we're programmed to
Exactly,
think
yeah.
that we have to work hard for anything that's worth having. So then now we've got to work hard to get back to our natural state. And I think it's
Yeah.
actually, I think it's probably been designed that way, the whole, the sort of trick of it, that because by working hard to be what we are, it keeps us from realizing that we already are that. So the harder we try
Yeah.
to be that, the further we get from it. I've been living that for 20 years, really, trying very hard just not to try. You know, it's like pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. And in the end, I think
Yes.
it's pretty much necessary for most of us. We've just been programmed with that mindset that says anything worthwhile has got to be worked for. That so that the only solution for me and probably for many others is just to finally just give up. You just give up working hard and just say, well, fuck it, I'll never be enlightened. I'll just enjoy what I am now and forget about being enlightened. And then suddenly you're there.
You're there. Yeah.
See.
That's one path. That's one path, yeah. And it's a pretty, you know, I think many tales tell that basic boiled down story you just said. Yeah, the moment you get out of your own way, you're out of your way, right? Then you're aligned.
Exactly.
It's like you're trying. Your trying is in your own way.
Exactly. Let's just cut to the chase. Have you been following the Stormy Weather blog at all lately, in the last few days?
I've let the last few days because of Jim's interview, my interest has been has been what is the term? Tweaked, peaked?
Tweaked
I don't
and peaked.
know.
Good. Well, because
Something has happened to my interest because, Jim is a close friend, and I'm very curious to hear what he's talking about and thinking about and how he interacts with you. And yeah, it's very, very interesting and exciting.
yeah, it is, and it's really sparked off a very lively, very challenging debate at the Stormy Weather, because it's such a delicate subject, and you've singled out the one question in the 64 which ties in with the subject we're discussing. So I thought we'd end on this subject of death in general, if you're okay with that, and that way that you can
Yes.
come aboard the debate in your own inimitable fashion. So question number 61 was, do you see mass death events as inevitable for the coming shift, and what are your personal thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's funny because I just did a post. Maybe I was unconsciously reacting to your podcast with Jim, or it was in there part of the chain of events that led to the post, but it was about Brad Pitt in the new Curious Case of Benjamin Button movie. I don't know if
Right.
you know about that film. Yeah, he ages backwards in there, and I was interpreting it on the blog as Brad Pitt represents time or death or Chronos. Because, as a resonator, he seems to have this come up more than once, and he's even plays the Angel of Death in Meet Joe Black,
Right.
and the poster for 12 Monkeys where he's in is this big iconic clock face with a 12, and the poster for another film he's in, Ocean's 12, has the big 12 on it. So, and I see that as connected to time and what crowns the clock.
Right.
So 12, the 12 hours cycle, and time and death and all these things. So I was just recently blogging about that, about death. And to me, it's, there's a subtle relationship, which I don't think it's the same as talking about the higher consciousness beings that we earlier, the context for dual people to have a talk about something non-dual is tricky, but
Right.
we can do it. Just if we acknowledge that the trickiness, But I think that death is not exactly what we think it is. It's just the end of the limited self. It's the reverse of being birthed. It's not this big traumatic, horrible thing, And also, there's the way of misinterpreting the ego death for physical death. And I feel like often that's what people are seeing when they see an apocalyptic ending coming very near. We're very near this big apocalypse or this big Armageddon. What they're seeing is the death of the ego, but because they believe that we are the physical body and the thoughts and the forms, and not the witness, not the observer, or the unnameable beyond all of that stuff that animates all of that stuff, because they believe in the things primarily, and they're hypnotized by the things. Their entire identity is made up of the mind and the things, that it is literal death, and will be interpreted as literal death because it's the only thing they can conceive it of. The transition, the consciousness shift, does look like death. And in a subtle way, it is death. It is death of the, and I mean the actual shape of it. I can't really talk about because I don't know. But I feel like there's a trick there, and people are missing the trick, that the apocalypse and all these things are just symbols of ego death.
So
And
does that mean that, I mean, if we're, and I agree with everything you said there, I see it in the same way, and that, but if we're interpreting and projecting our own understanding onto something that simply can't be understood or interpreted through the ego, does that not mean that we're going to experience it that way? Just as when we project onto the other, we experience it as a demon or an angel or whatever the elements of our psyche that we've put on it like rags have given, we've given it that reality because our interpretation, we're in this box where our interpretation is our reality, aren't we? That's what we know of as reality is our interpretation, like eating the menu rather than the meal. So if we're interpreting the apocalypse as this literal thing, that presumably means that's how we'll experience it also, until we get to the other side.
Well, that's one scenario that I entertain, is that every individual will experience what he needs to experience, or what he believes he needs to experience, or she. And then maybe, yeah, it will be the physical Armageddon that everybody fears for a section, and for the other section it'll be painless, easy transition from or maybe to some group it'll be like nothing. It'll be like just another day, and it's like, oh, but it's the infinite now. It's always been the infinite now, and now it's still the infinite now. Oh, okay, that's nice. And for other people, it'll be like this hugely traumatic thing. But I do feel like one hits a wall, like the light barrier. Like matter just can't travel like that. We can't conceive or talk about that because it's just beyond conceiving and talking. What will happen in the transition? I mean, will there even be a transition? This is even interesting, but I don't know. It's so slippery and mercurial, and it's I don't know. Like often, I feel like I'm completely convinced that we're heading towards a rapid evolutionary conscious change of global proportion. Because I can see the patterns and the synchronicities, and I get into that frame of mind, and then often I'll be like, "What am I going on about?" And it's like, "Isn't everything whole and complete right now? Isn't this heaven I'm sitting at? Isn't talking to Aeolus and being in a warm space in Winnipeg heaven? Isn't that the perfect union that I'm looking for?" And I'm like, "Yeah, it is." But or maybe they're both compatible. Maybe the external form level needs to undergo this process, and then that's what the pattern is. Or maybe it's a little joke that we need to play with and unravel. And I have so many disparaging feelings and emotions,
Disparate, yeah.
ideas about it.
Conflicting, you mean?
So conflicting, yeah.
Yeah, well, I had the same thought just yesterday. Why am I sort of propagating the idea of apocalypse and the necessity of the collapse of this world? And when I enjoy quite a lot just living in this world and this society, and in a sense, it's I don't watch TV, so I'm not exposed to the kind of the aspects of society that I do find oppressive. That do stir in me this desire for an apocalypse to wipe it all away, which was something, if I'm honest, that I developed as a teenager, as quite young, this sense that the world was founded on untruth, and that we needed to get, or I needed personally to get back to the truth. Don't you think that as children, as infants, and even as young children, we have a sense of what is true, and that it gradually gets either beaten out of us or covered over with the crust of our identities that we're forced to assemble and assume just to function in the world, and so the world is run on these sort of crusty beliefs of identity and of interpreted reality, which is essentially untruth. That's really, if I try and strip it all away, all the personal stuff and all the Armageddon doom and gloom, I think that's what it comes down to, is this sense of a need to return to what is true, and what you said before, the natural state. What is our natural state? I feel intuitively and intellectually that if we were all living in a natural state, we wouldn't have 7-Elevens and Walmart and Holocausts and world wars and world dictators and implants and all of this crap. I feel that it would actually just be swept away. Perhaps including the internet and all the rest of it, because I don't think we'd need it. But that's a very extremist position, and I sometimes wonder if I'm not making my life harder than it needs to be, because it's not there's no way for me to conceive of that reality in my lifetime except as a enormous, huge apocalyptic shift. There's no way that we can just gradually, put together a new world, is there? Not if it's going to be that big a shift.
I think it's yeah.
It's a tough one. It's a
You
tough one.
know, yeah. Well, it's just subtle. I don't think it's tough. It's just there's the sense of the individual, the process that me and you went through that was traumatic and allowed our awareness to open up to the subjects we've been discussing, that seems to me to be a fractal of what is happening to the collective. It's happened to the individual and has always happened to the individual, which was the source of religion and Buddha and Jesus and Moses, and these are examples in my philosophy or one interpretation of historical events is that this is a cracking of the shell in the past of identity, and then the infinite peers through human form and is the Buddha, and then around him this huge belief system is created, and now we move up into history, and we have the more dramatic movement into form, but at the same time, more and more people and more enlightenment. Still, relatively speaking, very small percentage, but a lot more than in the past. Like one person who, knows the truth does not, become a Buddha in the eyes of everybody. I feel like that process, the individual becoming enlightened, is speeding up for many individuals, and then this is creating a trickle-down effect, which is causing the entirety to flirt with the idea of becoming enlightened, as a species.
So,
And this would, I think, it's just we're debating about what would that mean, what would that look like on an external level, what does that mean for the structures as they exist right now? And I feel
definitely.
like it's maybe too complex to know, with a limited mind, like how exactly the shapes and forms will end up, all the structures that are currently existing, what will happen to them? Will it be like a weird, smooth transition where all the corporate and government people are, become enlightened? There's like slowly, like just flipped. It's just like a strange, smooth transition where the CEOs of all these big companies are infiltrated by enlightenment, and Starbucks starts selling and interacting with the environment in a healthy way. They're and Oprah Winfrey and all these people in key positions and Obama, every all of them become like you could call it infiltrated. I'm saying that in brackets, but they warm up to enlightenment, and then it spreads organically through the entire structure, or it needs a violent restructuring of the form level, which I think is just sort of the different ways of our minds trying to interpret what enlightenment of the species would require. And I think it's our personalities and our identities and our history that is dictating what we prefer, the it's sort of like flavors of ice cream. What would our end of world scenario look like?
What is, I mean,
More,
is it
I
preference?
prefer the.
Is it preference though? Because it seems to me what you're describing is nothing to do with conscious choice so much as what we've already made inevitable through the, I mean, we're talking about a huge cycle, aren't we? Not just the cycle of 6,000 years of history, but some cosmic cycle which may be
No.
millions of years long. And so if we're seeing the sort of final alchemical denouement of that, then it would seem to me that it's already pretty much predetermined, and it's up to us to simply to acknowledge, to allow the truth to come into consciousness of what it is that we need, what you're saying is preference, I would say, is simply what is going to be necessary. And so I
Yes.
wonder, I mean, when you're talking about the scenario of Starbucks and all the rest of it, I probably don't need to tell you that I'm more than skeptical about that. I simply can't even conceive that, and I like to think that I can conceive just about anything, but that's beyond my powers of conception. But I'm curious as to what does it depend on? That because as I mean as I see it, the power structures that are and Obama on the whole as it is right now in 2009 is it's something that we've set up and that again is founded on untruth. And so I would say that what you're describing depends to a large extent on, how it plays out. Depends how much we're able to own and integrate our own darkness, our own denial, our own responsibility for these structures. Whether they have to turn on us like wild dogs and show us, what we've denied, or whether we're able to really own it and so transform, allow those structures to transform in a way that's less catastrophic. To me, that depends on how conscious we are of our own shadow, to put it in a very simple phrase. And that's the question, collectively, how conscious are we? And again, it's intuitive stroke deductive. My intuition and my deduction says that people aren't very conscious of their shadow. That's why we demonize Hitler and Manson and the rest, and that's why we idealize somebody like Obama. And that's why they have to meet, because Hitler and Manson aren't all bad and Obama isn't all good. Far from it. So.
No, I fully agree, and I just when it comes to these impasses of I just don't know, I don't know the answers to those questions. I feel I just have this complete trust in the universe, and I feel that whatever happens will be exactly what should happen, or so I does it, it even though I can't answer the question, I feel completely happy to let it be that way, to see what comes, and to if it is the catastrophe, I will surrender to that and make peace with that and deal with it the best way I can. And if it's the joyous, rapturous, fully embracing of sort of a utopian, strange, very fast, rapid enlightenment of the species, and all the individuals just come together and party, then I will surrender and enjoy and participate in that. And whatever happens, will be perfect.
So, do you have a preference, personally?
The party. I want to party. With whoever wants to party, and not party as in a sacred party, not a
But
big orgy of
couldn't Emma,
crazy
sorry.
monkey. No, just no. I just mean us all acknowledging our inseparableness and just the coming into resonance and alignment and just having. Seeing joy in everybody around you, and just the and you'll it's there's so much happening, like nature, the environment, everything is starting to become alive. And this is part of the synchronistic worldview, is that even the environment and rocks and inanimate objects and the popular media and culture and all that stuff is becoming vibrantly alive and speaking directly to our consciousness, because it is directly related to our consciousness. And I feel like that can really deepen to this amazing new world where there's depth in everything, no matter what that thing is. The shape of it is kind of inconsequential.
But isn't what you're describing your own process of enlightenment, clearing the lens of Jake's psyche? Everything's becoming vibrant. Because I think, don't you think there are many people in the world for whom that's not the experience?
I feel for me personally, my life narrative is one of the kind where the individual has entrained with the collective, and my story is mirroring the entirety story.
There's a clinical name for that, isn't there? Solipsism.
I don't know. I don't know. I feel I can d see direct results in my environment as related to my continued deepening of my connection to the universe. And if that's just experienced, if that's sort of a localized thing where it's like, okay, it's only in a sphere about 50 meters around me, wherever I walk, the environment is alive, you know, then there's nothing I can do about that because I can't see beyond that event horizon. And maybe you can, and then you can tell me, and I will either believe you or not believe you.
Well, I think
But from my perspective, it's the entirety is coming alive. It just depends on the consciousness of the individual to choose to embrace that or not, you know.
I think if that's the case, Jake, then you need to travel the world and spread that virus.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. Yeah.
So bringing it to personal, keeping it more in the personal, then the last question that we're going to do is, if we have time, is on your personal idea of death, and does the nature of death and what comes after vary according to the individual, would you say? And if so, what can we do about it? What makes the difference as to how we die or, and what we die into?
I feel the individual death is exactly like we were talking about the heartbeat or a breath or the eyes blinking. Like every facet on every fractal level of everything has an on-off cycle. The sound we are making right now would not exist without spaces in between it. The thoughts in our mind require the neurons to fire, you know, ch-ch-ch. There's a on-off in the universe. It's part of everything, nothing is in this intimate dance. You think when you go to bed at night, you know, that you're just going to sleep, but in a way you're dying. You know, it's the same fractal thing is happening in your life that happens on a bigger scale. And the space in between the varies. So, you know, galactic cycles, the spaces are beyond the human, you know. They go through pulses that are mind-blowing, you know, we can't even conceive. The sun goes in a 24-hour cycle, and all these cycles of everything is in cycles. It only looks like death from the fractal level where the next space is too far from your event horizon. So I can see, and I'm not afraid to go to bed tonight because I know I will wake up tomorrow morning. If I had enough perspective, I would not be afraid to die personally because I would see the next beat. But I don't. So the idea of death seems a little bit spooky because I can't see the next the shape of the next when you come back. But I know that it's part of a cycle of some kind. It wouldn't make sense if there's just an off without an on. It doesn't work that way on any level. It's always a circle, a closed circle. So I think death is like that.
So what you're describing is very like Castaneda's, Don Juan's idea of using death as an advisor, which is that the warrior, whatever he or she does, consults with his or her death. And death is always at a warrior's side as an advisor. And so everything is seen within the context of death, not in a morbid, personal way of fearing it, a sense of accepting it and embracing it and allowing it to transform one's consciousness. And what you're describing is very similar. It's almost in reverse, or the reverse way of describing it, because you're talking about bringing death into the context of life, allowing death to be an organic, intrinsic part of life by seeing the ways in which it's constantly informing the process of life, this yin yang, on off, hot cold current of flow. That it simply there wouldn't be motion without the death element, would there? Nothing would move, nothing would change.
And there's also, but there's more subtle, peculiar, but tantalizing patterns and themes that suggest there's something with a lot of depth to the mystery of death that we haven't touched upon here. When I listen to Jim talk about Huan's interpretation of death, or Eckhart Tolle, or Zen teachers, they almost don't seem to know whether they are dead or not. There's this peculiar sense that you get that these truly, the masters who have completely surrendered, are in a state where they don't even know. It's like when you ask them, the concept seems, it's like they're trying to download the message to you in a lower dimension, because your very asking is part of the problem in those contexts, and it seems to me that there's this possibility that the deeply surrendering to the moment, or the fully enlightened human or aligned spiritual identity, perhaps becomes infinite and death. I don't even know if it if these people if it even like maybe the Buddha is alive right now, or the ascended master. In a way it's subtle. It's not like he becomes spirit and disappears. It's just like he completely surrenders to time, and in that moment becomes the infinite. And there seems to be hints that this is part of the reality of why there's so much powerful resonance from certain beings, is that they've transcended time and death somehow in the human form. And there's some hints that this is a reality.
Well, it would be our true natures, wouldn't it? It's like every number divided by infinity is zero, and so our true nature in eternity is on the other side of death, isn't it? It's like the saying, we die once, but for such a long time. Our conscious identity, physical, organic life, is just a fleeting moment surrounded by two eternities, and so. Our greater self, our immeasurably, infinitely greater portion of our existence is outside of what we consider life. So that would suggest that what we consider
That's yeah.
life isn't life at all. That
Yeah, or
that's just.
that we conceive of life. Eckhart Tolle says this specifically. He says the opposite of life is not death. The opposite of birth is death. Those are the cycles that the human body goes through, the human form. But life is eternal. It is beyond change. It is the, in that state, he is what I call consciousness, or the unknowable, or the unspeakable, or the infinite depth. Then that is life. If you attribute that to life, then you can't die, right? Then you are eternal. And then the forms that it takes, it's just sort of this this these cycles it's going through, or facets of its experience. So maybe that's sort of because the master is truly one with that life, he is beyond death, because he it's, to him it's a joke that his form will melt away, because it's like a natural cycle of something that's just a small facet of what you are, So why would you be afraid of that? Like it's like taking a sleep, going to bed at night. Like, why? I'm not afraid.
Like a snake shedding its skins.
Natural process, but not death. Like, or it's the death, but it's not the end of life. It's a joke. Life is eternal. So maybe that's part of it. I'm acting. It is part of it. Of course, it's part of it.
To bring it back to the question, then, what you describe would certainly make all the difference how we experience our death, all the difference in the world, because with or without fear to begin with, but also in openness and surrender. But do you also think that how we live our life and how we incorporate or assimilate the idea of death into our consciousness while we're alive, how much we surrender, do you think that also determines the nature of what happens after we die?
I don't know.
Good
I don't know.
answer. Because it's the truest thing we can say, but then we wouldn't be able to have this conversation if all we said is, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, perhaps I should let you go on
Yeah.
synchro-mystifying Winnipeg, do you think? Are we out of time?
Yeah.
Have you got like
Okay.
two more minutes?
Yes.
Yeah, are you feeling sufficiently surrendered? So, okay, you ready?
Yes.
Death is just another word for
Knowing yourself.
I'm not mad, I'm just
Spectacularly alive.
humanity is here to.
Realize
The best thing about sex is
having some.
the difference between children and grown-ups is
Perception of identity.
the nature of magic is
Mercurial.
the point of religion is
Realization.
the purpose of politics is
Barking at the moon.
world wars help to
Realize consciousness inevitably.
the greatest threat to man's survival is
Chocolate bars.
humanity's greatest flaw is
Lack of joy.
humanity's
One track mind.
yeah, it's a good track to be on. Humanity's greatest strength is its
Ability to surrender.
what makes the fit to survive.
Makes the fit to survive? Connectivity.
Nice. The nature of God is
The nature of God is woof.
so, yeah, thank you for coming on Stormy Weather, Jake Kotze, and go spread that virus.
Thank you, Aeolus.